Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Sit back and enjoy the stroke play of Meg Lanny.
This is excellent batting by Ash Gardner.
Jonathan strikes again. She's on a hat-trick. She comes at Molyneux. Catch is taken by Perry.
The Australian women's cricket team win their fifth T20 World Cup title in front of a magical crowd at the MCG.
Hello and welcome back to The Scoop. We are the cricket podcast dedicated to the women's game. My name is Emily Collin.
And I'm Laura Jolly.
And LJ, it is finally the season finale. So the Aussie women have swept the Rose Bowl series and finished the international season on a high. And to help us cap it all off, we're chatting with Hannah Darlington, who's coming off her first international tour, as well as cricket.com.au's very own Adam Burnett, who was the brains behind the Heat Repeat. But before we get to our two guests, LJ, what a ride that season was for Australia's women, and it started all the way back in September 2020.
It feels like a lifetime ago, and it has been a wild ride. It's amazing to think it was back then. New Zealand came across to Brisbane in September. It wasn't just them doing quarantine, it was all the Vic and New South Wales girls as well, and it was the first time Australia had played since that T20 World Cup final at the MCG. And it's certainly been a huge summer since then too.
Yeah, and then it was on to the WBBL, which of course, heading into that tournament, there were plenty of questions around what a WBBL would look like in a pandemic. But full credit to Cricket Australia, the whole season was played out of a hub in Sydney, which was obviously an unforgettable experience for players and staff. And of course, it was the Sydney Thunder who came away with their second trophy.
And then after a few false starts and border closures, it was WNCL time. And I think one of the best things about this season was that the fact that so many matches were streamed this year and fans were able to watch their favourite teams and players in action. The quality of the cricket was incredible. So many centuries scored and runs galore from Elise Villani and Georgia Redmayne. And it was awesome to see Queensland take home the Ruth Preddy Trophy for the first time in the 25-year history of the competition.
And then to bookend it all, it was Australia heading back to New Zealand for three T20s and three ODIs. So the T20 series obviously finished locked at one all after the decider was washed out. But the ODIs, it was pretty special to watch the Aussies come away with, they obviously came away with a clean sweep of the Rose Bowl and on the way broke the record for the most consecutive ODI wins in the ever. So we're now up to 24 wins and counting.
And I think there were a few nervous moments for people on Saturday when it looked like the streak might actually be at risk with the heavy rain in Mount Maunganui. It's one of those weird quirks of cricket where a total washout would have kept the streak intact, but as soon as the coin toss happened, it was going to count as a match and a washout from there would have ended the streak. Fortunately, even though Australia were up against it, the rain held off. They defended a score on a tricky wicket and then very quickly got on a 2 a.m. bus from Mount Maunganui off to Auckland Airport and straight home to Australia.
Yep, so the Aussie girls will be back on home soil probably already. But yeah, it is a phenomenal achievement for the Aussie women. LJ, that winning streak started back in March 2018, which is over 3 years ago now. So you were there in India when it all began. Take us back to that time and how, from your perspective, how has the team evolved over that three-year period?
Yeah, it's funny looking back, and obviously when these things start, you have no idea what they're going to turn into. And the headlines for Australia in that tour were the fact that Meg Lanning had just come back from her 8 months off with her shoulder injury. Beth Mooney forced her way back into the one-day side after being dropped for the Ashes and hasn't missed a game since, incredibly. And Alisa Healy scored her first ton for Australia. which when you think of what she's done since, that was such a watershed moment for her. And one of the biggest goals for Australia was just getting a bit of revenge over India after that World Cup semi-final. And in the T20s, they broke what had been a three-year drought without winning a single T20 series. So it's a very different time for the Australian team. And one of the things I remember looking back was just how much fun they had on that tour. Because India, it can be a bit like being in a hub at times. Players don't always get out of the hotel as much as they would in other countries, say like New Zealand. And the team really bonded under those conditions. I think Meg Lanning and Megan Shoot said at the end it was one of the best tours they'd ever been on in an Australian group just because of the way they gelled and how much they'd loved each other's company. And I think that's one of the things that's carried through with the team since. They just genuinely love being together. And anytime they come together after a big break, they're just so excited. And that's one of the things I think that has helped this team put together such an incredible run.
Yeah, for sure. It's been unbelievable to witness what this team's been able to achieve in that three-year window. And as you mentioned, Elisa Healy was one of the four players who played in each of those 22 ODI wins. So to hear her reflections on that winning streak, make sure to listen to this week's episode of the Unplayable podcast, where she chats with Sam Ferris about that winning streak and what it meant to the Aussies. But now we're all set for a well-earned break. LJ, what's next on the horizon for Australia's top female cricketers?
A very well-deserved break, as you said. They've got a nice big rest now for the next couple of months, which is very well-deserved, and we will be doing the same. But there's a lot of cricket to look forward to once things start up again, isn't there?
There's so much to look forward to in a massive 2021 and 2022 summer in Australia that will include a home series against India, of course a WBBL, a home Ashes series, and not to forget the massive ODI World Cup in New Zealand in March and April next year. But for now, the Scoop will be taking a bit of a break, so we're going to follow along with the cricketers in that sense. So want to say a huge thank you to all our listeners for tuning in. It's been a lot of fun for us doing this first season of The Scoop, and we can't wait to be back ahead of a huge summer this year. And welcoming onto the show today for the very first time, we've got cricket.com.au journalist Adam Burnett. Now, I'm sure plenty of our listeners will have read some of AB's wonderful feature pieces, but today AB is here to talk to us about the Heat Repeat. AB, firstly, tell us all about where the inspiration for a documentary revolving around the Heat's back-to-back titles came from.
Hey, Em. Hey, LJ. How are you guys going? You well?
Yeah, we're really well.
That's the way. Well, in terms of inspiration, it was a funny one because it was almost a year ago. I think about maybe 9 months ago, we were in the thick of COVID and we were stuck in Queensland. I work out of Queensland with one of our cameramen, Clancy Cinnamon. And, so it was almost just a situation of good circumstance where we knew the Queensland girls were stuck in Queensland as well. So they were prime targets for us, and obviously coming off the back of two titles. We knew there were some good storylines in there in terms of the success they had. But then on top of that, I guess, there's some really, as you guys would be well aware, some very strong personalities in that group. And, so we thought, well, let's dive into this if they're willing. And luckily enough, they were very willing. So away we went.
There was just a lot of drama. Were you expecting to pick up so many or uncover so many great storylines?
No, I probably wasn't. We were keen to just capture what was a good snapshot of the women's game, obviously, because there was that side story whereby, the success of WBBL 04 and the semi-final day where I think Jess Jameson put it, that day really put women's cricket on the map in her opinion. And we thought, okay, well, let's sort of take advantage of, you know, this rise in women's cricket and really put it on full display. But then, as we sort of got going into the narrative, and all the interviews that we were doing, little threads revealed themselves here and there. And it was good. It was good to scratch the surface a little bit because, you know, not every cricket team is one big happy family. And that's part of the challenge, I guess, of a professional environment. You've got to work your way through it and get the best out of each other. And that's what the Heat were able to do through, I guess, some good leadership and yeah, some mature approaches at the right times.
Yeah, so I guess after going through all those little threads and storylines, you ended up with a two-part documentary that aired on Foxtel. Was this always the plan, AB, and at what point did you realise it was going to turn into such a big thing?
Good question, Em. I'm not 100% sure when it started spinning out to sort of 90 minutes plus, but, yeah, the more content we compiled, the more interviews we did, the girls were extremely generous with their time, so they, you know, we got hours and hours with, you know, half a dozen of them or more. We're able to get the Kiwi girls, Amelia Kerr and Maddie Green for a bit of a shorter period, but the ones who were in Queensland were really generous with their time, sat down with us and really dove into it. So once we worked out that there were some good stories beyond Yay We Won and, you know, some more compelling narratives, we thought, okay, well, we can spin this out a bit further, and that's what we did. We thought, yeah, some of the more combative, I guess, storylines were pretty interesting for the viewers.
And we've seen a lot of really compelling sports docos cropping up in recent years. Were there any that inspired you?
Just looking back at the timeline, I'd be lying if I didn't say the Jordan one, like everybody else. I think we watched that in, I think, April, May, didn't we? And this idea was creeping up around then. So we definitely wanted to jump on that. That was definitely a catalyst. And there's been some really good ones. Obviously the test, which I guess those were slightly different in themselves. The test obviously following the Aussie team through the events, whereas this one was more a retrospective piece, but it was fun to do, and it's a lot of work, but it's a nice to be able to explore a different medium and tell a story through visual means as well.
So it all started with that dressing room dust up in WBBL04. It was early in the season. The Heat had just gone down to the Strikers in a pretty disappointing loss. So it was Beth Mooney and Kirby Short out in the middle. They weren't able to chase down the target. There were a few wickets in the shed. And Jess Jonathan sort of brought it up that it might have been a little bit selfish by the two leaders not to really give it a crack. It was pretty intense stuff. How did you sort of come across that storyline?
Yeah, well, that was that kind of, as I said, I guess little threads reveal themselves along the way, and then you have to bluff a little bit as an interviewer and maybe pretend you know more than you do. And I think I spoke to Beth first, and she's always a great interview because she's really candid and she doesn't hold back. But so she sort of alluded to a little bit of friction in that match and after that match, I guess. And she said that she thought, oh God, I think it's in the doco. She says, oh, this is going to be a long season. And, not ideal from when your best player is saying that after game one, but I guess in a sense, all the more credit to them for then going on to win two in a row. And yeah, that allowed me to sort of explore it a little further with the next interview and then a little bit further with the next interview. And then once it's clear that, you know, it's out there, the players are more sort of comfortable to talk about it, and that's how we roll.
And is there a certain level of trust required to get the girls to be comfortable revealing details like that?
Yeah, I think so, LJ. As you'd be well aware, you know, we're in a pretty fortunate position where we've spoken to these girls, especially you, more so than me, but the Queensland girls I've built some reasonable relationships with, I hope, and over the last few years. So that, and you're a familiar face, and I guess you become to a point a trusted face, and then you try and build on that. You don't want to do the wrong thing by them by any stretch, so you've got to be conscious of the story that you're telling, and in that regard, I guess honesty is always the best policy. And if they're willing to, you know, reveal what they're willing to reveal, then you have to be a little bit careful to portray it accurately, or very careful, I guess. But the main thing is just telling it honestly, because if you do that, then you can't go too wrong, I don't think.
Were some of them a bit more forthcoming than others?
Yeah, Beth was an interesting one because she was the first one I spoke to. So normally Beth is probably the most candid of the lot. And as I said, I guess she was the one who sort of alluded to a few issues. But the thing is, and that sort of allowed me to go further with the other girls in terms of those storylines. But we got a bit lucky in the sense that this is a group of, none of them are shrinking violets. I don't think any of them would be fence sitters. It's a pretty strong group, and that's probably why they've had so much success as well. But, you know, JJ is very strong. Grace Harris, DK, Delissa Kimmins, they're all confident speakers, and they're not afraid to voice their opinions. So it was really good in that regard.
AB, after watching the documentary, it really did seem like the influence of Kirby Short was just so important from the group, but maybe something a fan wouldn't pick up on just through watching the cricket. From your perspective and speaking to Kirby and all her teammates, what was it about her leadership that allowed that team to blossom?
Good one, Em. I actually had forgotten to mention Kirby until now. And yeah, she, when it comes to confident and well-spoken and all of those things, she was probably top of the list. She was amazing. We spoke to her one afternoon and it just went on and on and on. And I think she was sick of us by the end of it, but she just spoke so well and we had so many questions for her. She was fantastic. So what made her such a good leader? I think she is a really empathic person. So she tailors her leadership to the individual. So she won't just say, okay, my way or the highway. She seemed to know that, okay, this is how Beth operates. I'm going to talk to Beth like this. This is how Grace operates. And she was someone who just seemed to be able to get on the right page with every single one of her players. And she also walked the walk as well as talking the talk. I mean, in the second season there, you saw how she got shuffled down the batting order. And that was a Ashley Nofke head coach sort of move, but she saw that as being best for the team, and her whole thing is about what's best for the team. So she had to put her ego aside a little bit and say, okay, well, if this is best for the team, then down I go. And she took that one on the chin, and as I think Ash Nofke said, just how incredibly well she took it. And it's pretty remarkable to be able to do that mid-season and then continue leading your side so well.
And this was a sort of new venture for you into this long-form video storytelling, and hopefully not your last. Is it something you want to keep pursuing?
Yeah, it takes a long time. That's what I learned. And, you know, the video guys who put it together, Warren Dowley and Clancy, would have spent even more hours than I did on it in the edit suite, as they call it, and just refining and doing their thing. But I think it was around about a 3-month project, and we weren't working on a ton of other things through that time. So it's a big chunk of time. As you guys know, the international cricket calendar doesn't afford us these windows too often. So we were lucky to be able to take that one. I'd be keen. I just need an idea to motivate me. You guys got anything at the moment?
We'll let you know. AB, have you heard of any feedback from the players or the fans yet?
Yeah, I've had a couple of nice texts from a handful of the players, and
nice.
which was cool. One of them said that all the feedback she'd been receiving was only overwhelmingly positive. Some really nice stuff. So it's always, we don't get a ton of feedback in this game, do we? So it's nice when it comes.
Excellent. AB, thank you so much for joining us on this week's episode of The Scoop. And for all the listeners out there, if you haven't watched the Heat Repeat yet, do yourself a favour and go on to cricket.com.au and watch the 2-part series. It's well worth your time. Thanks, AB.
Thanks, guys. It's good.
And we are joined on this week's episode of The Scoop by young gun Hannah Darlington. Hannah, you're nearly wrapping up your first ever international tour. How have you found it so far? Is it pretty much what you expected, or is it different, and how's it all gone for you?
Yeah, I guess it's not really what anyone expected to be my first tour and have to do a quarantine and kind of have 2 weeks away under COVID environment is a little bit different, but yeah, it's flown by. So I think that's the best part. We've been busy and yeah, just totally enjoyed the squad.
And we've watched the team break the world record for consecutive ODI wins since you've been over there. From your perspective, what sets this team apart in the way they train and the way they approach the game?
Yeah, it's actually been really cool watching how they go about their training. And that's probably been the biggest standout, is that they train really hard and really consistently in terms of the way they want to play, which is attacking fearless cricket. And they do that in the nets, which is pretty cool to be a part of and kind of find out how the best go about it. But from the perspective of the record, like they're probably the most deserving team to have such a unique lineup, but also a really consistent one over the last couple of years. It's been really cool to kind of watch. And yeah, it was pretty nice to stand in those change rooms after that game.
Yeah, I bet it would have been very, very fun to be a part of. And Hannah, you mentioned training alongside this team. They train the way they play. What are some of the things that you've picked up from this team while training with them on the tour?
It's been awesome. I think I've kind of gravitated towards watching kind of Megan Shute, Nicola Carey, and how they've gone about their work in the nets, just being similar players. And yeah, they're really smart about how they go about what they need to get out of the sessions. And then Ryan Harris has been amazing to have around the group as the bowling coach, been working with him quite a bit. Yeah, I think all the quicks are kind of working together because there is so many of us. So you're always kind of working with someone, which is cool because we're all pretty different in a way. So, yeah, it's nice to kind of pick up things from everyone.
Has there been anything about your first Australian tour that's been different from what you might have expected or that surprised you?
I think the only thing that probably stands out is you're kind of called upon on yourself to sort yourself out, get what you need. And it's all on you. I think being in other environments, you know, it's kind of a bit more coach-led, a bit more captain-led, and, you know, you're kind of told what to do a little bit, but here it's all at your free will. You get what you need and it's cool. It's pretty cool to kind of choose your own adventure, but, yeah, it's a high professional environment, so trying to find out what you need and get it done is pretty important.
Nice. And we saw on Insta a couple of days ago you joined a few of the girls hiking up the mount. So aside from the cricket, what's been keeping you busy in New Zealand? Has it been a bit of a chance to get to know some of the Aussie girls a bit better?
Yeah, it's been nice to get out and about, get to some cafes, you know, try the coffee around the place, get some nice brekkies. But, yeah, we did climb the mount. We tried to get a paddleboard session in, but it was too windy and a couple of us were a bit chicken to get in the water. It was pretty cool. So we ended up, yeah, opting for the walk back to the hotel. But yeah, there's plenty to do in the mount. I think it's a perfect location to kind of set a base for these ODIs, and yeah, it's a beautiful scenery and I think the weather's looked after us well up until this point. So yeah, it's been amazing to kind of explore.
And we saw the group went to a local, to visit some local Maori school kids the other day with the White Fern squad. How did you find that experience? So it looked like you played some games and saw a few dances.
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. It was cool to kind of see another perspective of a different culture, and you can kind of understand a little bit more how outsiders feel kind of when we do our Indigenous protocols and celebrations, and that was really nice to kind of learn a new experience and how they go about their culture. And these kids are amazing. They were so in tune with their culture, and I think that's something I'd you know, love to see a bit more back home. But these kids were so proud to be able to show us what they were all about, and yeah, to start playing some games with them was awesome. And they loved cricket, they loved showing us all these little games. I learned a new game, I think it was with these two sticks, and it was awesome. This little girl was teaching me and taught me so well, and yeah, it was amazing. Just see little kids, you know, so proud of their culture.
Yeah, it looked like heaps of fun. And on a similar note, recognising First Nations cultures was obviously a really significant part of the Aussie women's team summer as well as in the WBBL. Is that something you enjoyed, getting the chance to share your culture with some of your Sydney Thunder teammates?
Definitely. I think coming into the WBBL hub, it was a really good chance to kind of set down a platform for how we wanted to do that. And we're lucky to kind of have NAIDOC week within that and kind of recognise that there was some pretty good opportunity in there to have all the squads together, kind of take part in it all as one. I think that was the special part. It was a real collective way to go about it, just not the Sydney Thunder, but every team kind of jumped on it and was with it together. So yeah, I think it was kind of a shining light of the hub of how much education, recognition came out of it.
Yeah, and looking at Ash Gardner, who's having a huge impact as a role model for Indigenous community, how big a role do you think cricket can play in the lives of Indigenous children?
Massive. I think we've got an awesome chance here to kind of, we've seen how other sports have been doing it around the country and around the world with their First Nations. So cricket's kind of got this chance now where they've got Ash in the national team. There's plenty of the blokes doing amazing things in the national scene as well. So I think, yeah, it's a real chance over the next couple of years to continue this education. I think that's the most important part, is to people want to learn. And it's pretty cool to see your teammates want to have these conversations with you. And Ash is really good with that in the Australian setup. They all really respect Ash, and I think that's awesome. And she's doing a great job at it. So, yeah, I think the next couple of years are going to be really important just to continue that growth.
Yeah, for sure. And we saw a couple of months ago, Annika Learoyd took the field for the Breakers alongside you and Ash. So that was the first time there have been three Indigenous players in a domestic team. How special was that for you guys? And does that sort of give you encouragement that there are going to be more and more Indigenous kids coming through the pathways?
Yeah, I can definitely say that was one of the more special days of my career. I think it was my debut as captain as well. And to see Annika make her debut, and, you know, she's my housemate, she's one of my best mates. We've kind of grown up playing cricket up in Alice together, and our first kind of Impaja Cup, I think it was, Ash was there as well. So it was pretty special that we kind of did the full circle to go and play for the Breakers together. And it was a pretty special day. And Ash even presented a cap, which made it even more special. And I think Ash was more nervous at that point than Annika. But yeah, it's been awesome. And I think to see that growth of some of these kids that are coming through the Impaja Cup, they've just got natural ability. It's so special to see them go out there and do that. And there's definitely more opportunities arising for them to make their way into the pathway system.
Speaking of the Breakers and your captaincy, how did you find that experience?
Yeah, it was pretty daunting. Kind of got chucked in. As soon as the Australian selection came, I thought I might have got out unscathed with having to take the reign this season. But super honoured to have that opportunity. And obviously Midge was unfortunate to miss those couple of games due to family reasons, but she had my back the whole way, and the squad did as well. And it was really nice to kind of go out there, an unfortunate result in the tie, but no better way to get welcomed to captaincy than a high pressure situation. So we love that. But yeah, it's been a dream to play for the Breakers. So it was a dream on top of that to kind of lead them out there and, you know, kind of prove the way that young cricketers can kind of do anything in this day.
Yeah, awesome. And it was only last summer that you missed out on a Breakers contract and decided to head over to New Zealand to play in the Super Smash. What sort of made you give that a crack?
Yeah, I guess I kind of looked at the opportunity, whether to train with the Breakers and try and break into their 11. I saw an opportunity at the back of the year when the Australian players were going to be leaving. And I kind of thought the best way to get cricket under my belt was to be playing. And that kind of came through the opportunity with the Otago Sparks. And it was going to be T20 cricket, but I didn't want to turn down the opportunity to be playing cricket instead of just training. So it ended up working and getting me a 50 over call up, which is the best part. And it's kind of a weird moment if you've done full circle and back at New Zealand a year later kind of thing. And it's all kind of worked out a bit weirdly over the last year. But yeah, I wouldn't change it for anything.
And you weren't even 18 at that point, and you're living and playing cricket overseas by yourself. How was that experience, and what did you learn from it?
It was massive. I think mum and dad were probably a little bit more nervous than I was letting their kid off to New Zealand to live by themselves and kind of find their way. But yeah, I've always kind of enjoyed those kind of situations of learning it and being able to go over there. I had Katie Martin and Susie Bates, who are, you know, legends for New Zealand cricket, to learn off. And that was pretty awesome to kind of have a new environment, find my way around a new team, and then be able to, yeah, play some good cricket and get them to a semi-finals appearance, which they had to strive for, and then fly back and make my debut. So it was, yeah, it was a pretty special time, and yeah, just another chance to learn, I guess.
Yeah, what a time. And after all that T20 cricket that you've played sort of during the WBBL earlier this summer, how did it go for you making the shift to playing some one-day cricket back for the Breakers?
I absolutely loved it. I think I've been itching probably the whole pre-season to get a couple more overs under my belt and kind of feel that rhythm of 50-over cricket, especially in the bowling. I think it's really nice to kind of set up a batter and have that little bit longer to kind of work into your work. And yeah, it was nice to really be able to, you know, enjoy that most of the season with the Breakers at the back end, and you kind of feel a bit of rhythm coming off the T20 season where everything's a little bit fast and shifted and anything can be thrown at you. So yeah, I'm really enjoying 50 over cricket at the moment. It's probably a huge area of development for me at the moment as well. So just trying to find my way.
Do you reckon T20 cricket is still your preference, like, and still the format that suits your game the best?
Yeah, definitely at this point. It's what I enjoy. I've always loved playing T20 cricket and the excitement it brings, the challenges it brings, the pressure, everything that comes with it. But yeah, I think going back to 50 over cricket makes you realise that it's nice to kind of have a familiar position in T20 cricket where I know my role, whereas in 50 over cricket, it's a bit new at the moment. So yeah, I didn't think it would be that way when I was a bit younger, but yeah, really enjoying T20 cricket and at the moment, definitely a strength.
And speaking of the WBBL, the dust is all settled on that now. What are your lasting reflections on life in the hub? And do you think the way the Thunder Girls embraced it contributed to your success?
I think I've said to everyone that asked about the hub that our success was going to come down to the way we kind of gelled as a group and embraced it. We knew that this year probably could have been a year that any team could have won. It just would have been who made the best out of what they were given. And yeah, every kind of team had things thrown in their path and a couple of challenges along the way, but I think we embraced everything. And to have a skipper like Rachel Haynes kind of lead you through those kind of experiences helps a lot. She's so calm and level-headed. She just kept the group where they needed to be at every point of the competition, which was massive. But yeah, I think looking back on it, it was pretty special and quite rewarding to come out of an experience like that with a medal around your neck.
For you personally, that experience in the WBBL Village, it was obviously a pretty unique couple of months. Is it something that you look back on fondly now with a lot of good memories?
I had a great time. I know a couple of the girls went a little bit crazy in there and were a little bored, but I had a great time. I was finding things to do. It was a little bit weird that home was 20 minutes around the corner and was I think, yeah, it kind of made it worth it that we were playing good cricket and made it probably a little bit easier as well. So you kind of had mates in every team that would help you out along the way and they kind of became part of your mates away from cricket in a form. But yeah, it was nice to have a great team help you through it.
And sort of looking back to the start of the season, you guys had a pretty young list and perhaps not many people backed you to go all the way. Did you as a group think you had the belief to go all the way?
Yeah, I don't like using a building phase because I think every team is successful in its own rights. And it probably was a little bit of a building year for us. And we went into there with a younger lineup, a couple of new internationals, which I think was going to be a momentum change for us. And it worked really well that the internationals we got came in and really fitted well within our squad. Heather Knight did amazing in terms of performances. And then Shabni Mismail also came back in and had another great year. So I think that kind of helped our experience boost. And our young kids were able to just play cricket. I think that was the best part. And it was nice to kind of see the young kids step up at different stages and, yeah, kind of built towards a good mix of experience and youth that ended up being a championship winning team.
And you spoke about the leadership of Rachel Haynes, obviously also the Aussie vice-captain there now. What have you learnt from her leadership style and she's so experienced in that space?
Yeah, I've been doing quite a bit of work with Rach around leadership and, she's kind of taught me a lot in terms of just how to have those conversations with teammates. Kind of lead the way in terms of how you go about your training and everything like that, but probably more just trying to figure out when to speak and when those little things that not many, leaders think about in terms of when you're speaking, is people listening and is it the right time to speak and things like that, just the things that kind of make a bigger impact than you think. And yeah, I think she's been awesome at that. And it's kind of nice to watch her go about her vice captaincy here in the Australian as well. And yeah, she's probably one of the most professional leaders I've seen and, yeah, so much respect.
And we'll just touch on a bit of your life outside of cricket, Hannah. So you're studying marine biology, is that right?
Yes, correct.
And what led you to that?
It was a little bit of a toss-up. I always was a science fan in school and kind of went with nutrition science or marine science and, yeah, kind of had an experience up in Coffs Harbour where I saw a shark get rehabilitated and it was just kind of a light bulb moment and that was it. Went from there, enrolled in the course a couple of months later and, yeah, I'm kind of here at the moment, second year of uni.
There you go. How have you been managing to keep on top of your studies with all the cricket that's been going on?
Yeah, quarantine helped me quite a bit, the 2 weeks, nothing, which was nice because I had an assignment due today, which was handed in yesterday in good time. So, yeah, I guess it's nice kind of having people in similar positions to get your uni done and they motivate you through it as well. So, yeah, it's been quite nice to have something to do though, especially when you're enjoying your studies.
Absolutely. And you mentioned you live with Annika Learoyd. Do you live with Lauren Cheadle as well?
Correct. Yep, there's the three of us in there with a nurse as well who, looks after us all.
How's it all going? And is this all your first experience living out of home?
Cheats has lived out of home quite a bit. And Annika moved down to Sydney from Coffs Harbour at the starting of the Breakers pre-season. But this is our first time in a full kind of share house, which has been really cool. Some of my best mates as well. And, yeah, we're kind of helping everyone through this experience of being a professional cricketer, which is really nice. Yeah, I'm actually missing them a bit being over here. I don't know how they're coping back home. But, yeah, it'll be nice to get back in and back into a routine. But, yeah, they've been really supportive. And, yeah, it's a nice kind of feeling to have mates as well as teammates that have always got your back.
Nice. I'm assuming you guys do a fair bit of training together when you're at home, or is it no cricket chat at all?
No cricket chat. We keep it in unless we're kind of helping each other out, which we do quite a bit. But yeah, we're all really competitive. So we've even got a whiteboard in the kitchen that has everyone's fitness PBs, and we're trying to beat each other. But at the moment, Annika's topping us because she's a bit of a fitness nuffy. But yeah, hard to try and get spots on the whiteboard off each other.
And it's been a pretty intense summer for you, Hannah. There's been so much cricket on. Have you got any plans for when you return back to Australia to chill out, or any holidays on the horizon?
Yeah, if I knew about the travel bubble, I probably would have stayed in New Zealand a little bit longer. I guess after being here, it's going to be nice to kind of head back and get back into a bit of an off-season rhythm, enjoy some time away completely away from cricket. It's been a long season. I think it'd just be nice to spend some time around the family as well. Obviously, the hub took some time away and things like that. So, yeah, it'll be nice just to kind of have no plans. I think that's my biggest part. I'm happy to kind of just see what I want to do each day and go from there.
Sounds ideal. Well, thank you so much, Hannah, for joining us on this week's episode of The Scoop. It was a pleasure to chat. We wish you all the best for the rest of the series and have a good break from cricket once it's all over.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Healy's away. Australia away.
Sit back and enjoy the stroke play of Meg Lanny.
This is excellent batting by Ash Gardner.
Jonathan strikes again. She's on a hat-trick. She comes at Molyneux. Catch is taken by Perry.
The Australian women's cricket team win their fifth T20 World Cup title in front of a magical crowd at the MCG.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.